Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Andrew Glick. Andrew, thank you so much for being a guest. I'm delighted to have you with me.
Glad to be here.
We start at the very beginning, and I'm pretty sure you were not born in Oregon, so where were you born?
I was born in Peoria, Illinois, about halfway between Chicago and St. Louis.
And was that a home area for your parents, or what's the story there?
Both of my parents grew up in central Illinois in neighboring towns. And long story short, Peoria had the hospital that was closest to the town we were living in.
How many siblings do you have, and where do you fit in the family?
I'm in the best spot. I'm the youngest. I have two older sisters, 6 years and 4 years older than me.
So they were fairly close together, and then after a little while, you came along.
That's right. I didn't ask my parents too closely about that one, but I think they wanted me, so.
Did you ever wish that you had a brother?
Yeah, all the time. Most of my close friends growing up had brothers. But also, I don't remember that being like a huge thing for me. I had a number of, you know, just good friends that kind of felt like it filled that role in some ways.
We are now getting into the holiday season, and we like to talk about your growing up years. Do you have memories of Thanksgiving, Christmas, when you were growing up? What was happening with your family?
Well, we would get together with either mom's side or dad's side, probably alternating at Christmas or Thanksgiving. Dad's side is a little more spread out, so that would mean maybe going up to Wisconsin to be with my aunt and uncle, or somewhere else in a neighboring state, whereas mom's family was maybe 45 minutes away. So that was always a lot easier to get together. Yeah, memories from either of those growing up. Maybe the easiest, or one of the things that jumped out at me, is that when my older cousin on my mom's side started going to Goshen College, he would always bring home international students. And so Thanksgiving, we would always have often a lot of Indonesian folks around, which was kind of my first introduction to people from other places, to be honest, which is pretty neat.
You just mentioned a cousin, so I'm guessing that there were cousins on both sides that you were able to spend time with during the holidays, maybe?
Yeah, a few. I was the youngest on both sides by quite a bit. So I didn't really have, I think my next closest cousin was my sister, 4 years older. And then my next closest cousin after that was my other sister, 6 years older. So I didn't really have any like peer cousins, but had a couple of cousins on both sides.
What work was your father doing, or what work were your parents doing as you were growing up?
They're both teachers. So they got to just hang out with us all summer. For better or for worse. But dad was a high school physics and chemistry teacher, and mom was a fifth grade teacher.
So I'm guessing that, and they were teaching in public schools?
Correct.
So you went to public school as well?
That's correct. My parents are big believers in it.
How did you get to school in those elementary years? Were you living in town and you could walk, or what's the story there?
Yeah, we lived in town. I think my parents partly located in that part of town for its proximity. So through third grade, I just walked. It was two blocks to elementary school, which normally I would walk one block solo. And then you could kind of see mom the other block. You could see him for that one block and then walk together the other. She would always kind of wait at this corner with some other moms. For me coming home from elementary school and then from middle school. So she stayed at home until I was probably in six or something. Like once I started going to school again, mom started working again. She was home for maybe, I don't know, 10 years or so. And so I would just be at home by myself from 7 to 8 in the mornings. And then that one was maybe a half by middle school. Pekin was kind of weird. We had fourth, fifth, and sixth grade was one building. And I would hang out at my house. I guess they thought I was mature enough to be there by myself from 7 to 8 because they were already gone at work and school started at 8. And I remember leaving my house at like 7:56, and I could get there, get into the room before the bell rung at like 8:10 or something like that, because the doors opened at 8, but you had like 10 minutes to get in there. So it was my shortest commute to date still.
So did you have to run to make it?
I rode my bike, yeah.
So for that hour that you were home alone, were you ever scared, or what was that like for you?
I don't have a lot of memories of it. I don't remember being scared or anything. Yeah, I think if anything, I don't know, I could probably turn on the TV and my parents didn't know, so that was nice. Flip through all 4 channels and indulge.
Is it safe to say that as you were growing up and you had your bike, did you kind of have the run of the town, as we might say, or were your parents like, were there certain rules or guidelines as to where you could go on that bike?
I felt like I could go wherever. Yeah, I think that it gave me mobility a lot earlier than, yeah, if you're a lot car reliant, for sure. Some of my friends who lived in the country didn't have near as much flexibility going to friends' houses when they were kids. So yeah, I mean, they wanted to know like where I was going. If I was going to someone's house and the parents weren't there, they wanted to like be on top of that. But besides that, I mean, I don't know, I could bike around town and it was fine.
And were there cool places to go to?
Oh, I don't know about that. Not necessarily in Pekin. Were there cool places to go to? There's a big park in the middle of the city, which is pretty cool. My main memories are just going over to friends' houses and doing a very un-Mennonite thing, shooting rubber band guns. I don't know how I got away with that one, but somehow I made it through the pacifist screening process.
And then you got into high school. Tell me about extracurricular activities in high school for you.
In high school, I did orchestra for maybe for 2 years, I think, which was before school in the morning. To the chagrin of my older sister, I think I left after those 2 years, and to the chagrin of future Andrew, to be honest. But at the time, did not think violin was a particularly cool instrument. I was wrong, but at the time, that's how I felt.
The violin,
yeah. So we all 3 of us kids played. My older sister played, and she's a professional now. That's what she does. And we all just wanted to be like her. There was a music teacher, I could attest to her, music teacher came to first grade, or kindergarten, I think it was, said, hey, you all should come learn to play the violin. And Kara went home. She's like, Mom and Daddy, I want to play the violin. And they're like, this is a phase. She doesn't want to do this. Like, we're not going to do this. Well, the next year, she still wanted to do it. So like, fine. All right, we'll get a rental violin. We'll give this a shot. And now she's a professional violin teacher. So be careful what you deny your kids with there.
Were you involved in sports of any kind?
Yeah, that was probably my biggest extracurricular. I did soccer and swim in the wintertime and then track in the spring.
You're fairly tall. I was going to guess basketball, but you didn't play basketball?
I didn't play basketball. My hand-eye coordination, one of the things that often comes with being tall, at least in my family, is hand-eye coordination is subpar at best. And I was also as tall as I am now in the 8th grade. So I grew kind of quick and didn't really know what to do with all that extra inches. So, I mean, I could probably catch a basketball, but I don't know if I could get anywhere near a hoop.
So you said you played soccer and you ran track?
Yep, and swam in the winter.
Were you any good at any of those?
Well, it depends how big your pond is, right? At the level that was at that school, I was reasonably okay at both soccer and track. I was pretty bad at swim. I was the worst kid my freshman year. I was 60-some kids on the swim team, and I was dead last. So it happens. Couldn't dive in the pool. But soccer and track were more my thing, and was able to do okay and enjoy it.
And what was happening with church when you were growing up?
I mean, we went like every day. No, it wasn't quite every day, but we would go consistently Sunday morning, Sunday evening. There was always an evening service. Then we had a Bible study with a small group with another three or four families. So that characterized most of it. I mean, until high school, junior high and high school, you start getting MYF mixed in there. But until then, it was really those two things. And it was set up so, well, I mean, this isn't why they set it up, but it worked out for me, that you had evening church and morning church. So it was just like prime, you know, you go over to your friend's house for the afternoon because you know you're going to be able to pick each other up in the evening. So for me, it facilitated a lot of friendships to be able to just like, well, you just pawn your kids off. And if you're lucky, you can pawn off all three, but sometimes you end up with six. So it's just kind of how it goes.
What was the name of this church?
Hopedale Mennonite Church. Church out in the country. It was actually a little ways from where we lived. It was probably a 30-minute drive.
Was it safe to say that both of your parents were raised Mennonite as well?
They were. They were, yeah.
After you graduated from high school, what came next and how did you make that decision?
I didn't cast a super wide net, I'll admit. I was between EMU and Goshen, two Mennonite schools. For college, I knew I wanted to do some type of engineering, and neither of them had engineering, so that was a bit of a struggle. So kind of went back and forth, kind of wanted to go to EMU. That's where both my sisters went. But Goshen had a better physics program, and so decided to go to Goshen.
But it was understood that you would go to college.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I felt pressure. I think it's what I wanted. I don't think that there was a whole lot of, I don't know. I mean, I think of like the people in like my congregation and the people who were examples, like a lot of people had college degrees, but not everybody. And I think if I would have chosen to do a trade or something, that would have been completely fine. But yeah, showed more interest in school and enjoyed school, did reasonably well.
So you mentioned that your real interest was in engineering. Where did that come from?
Oh, I don't know. I think I started doing, I always kind of enjoyed math and science and, you know, people then. I don't know how much of it is what you like and how much of it is people telling you what they think you should do, right, when you're good at math and science. But starting in high school, I was already taking classes in engineering and working on little, I kind of knew I wanted to do some type of renewables at that point. So tinkered on little solar projects or what have you in high school. So kind of had facilitated that to some degree. I don't know when exactly it started. When I was really little, I wanted to be a paleontologist. And then I went to author until I got a really, really bad mark on a paper when I was in like the sixth grade. And I was like, all right, this is not going to happen. So had to be more realistic.
What were you going to write? What were you thinking you might write?
Oh, mostly about huskies. It wasn't a particularly deep.
Dogs?
Pensership, that's correct.
Where did you get interested in huskies?
I don't know where it was. I don't know, it was just like a childhood obsession. I was never allowed to have a dog. I was always kind of jealous of having a dog. One time we went to an MYF auction, and a dog was brought up at this auction. We're sitting in the audience and the dog started at $1. And I was like, Dad, I got a bid on this dog. Like, I've got $1. I've got several dollars. Like, I'm all in. And he's like, fine, you can bid $1 on this dog. Like, the point of MYF auctions, right, is that people pay overpriced. You're being generous, right? Like, you're not letting something go for less than what it should go for. Well, the other aspect of this is like nobody wants to like bid up like a third grader who's like super excited about a dog. And so I won that dog. And my dad is like, nope, we're not doing that. Called my bluff. So I don't know. I always like.
What happened? We have to know what happened.
To the dog?
Well, yeah. I mean, you didn't get to take it home?
No, I didn't get to take it home. No. No, so, the dog stayed there.
Why didn't you have animals at your house?
Well, we lived in town, and it just, like, to be honest, I'm on my dad's side now. Like, if you live in town, you either have to like build a super tight fence around your little yard. There's not that much space for him. And, you know, he grew up in the country, or like, I mean, it was technically in town, but like in a small enough town that like you have like an acre lot and that dog can just run wherever it wants. And in the city, you know, you have to, there's just, in the country, you don't have to walk your dog. You don't have to do a lot of things. You just like, they just go do the thing. Whereas in the city, it's like a lot more maintenance, right? Anyway, don't need to expose on dogs. Dogs are great. Love dogs. But it wasn't a good fit for us.
I'm sorry. I just am sorry that you didn't get your dog.
The dog went to a neighboring family that it was a great dog. I got to hang out with it as it got older. So it worked out.
Well, getting back to college, you said that you knew that there wasn't really engineering at either EMU or Goshen, but you went to Goshen. Did you major in physics? What happened? Did you go there all 4 years?
I was planning on doing 3 years at Goshen, 2 years at a different school for engineering, and then ended up just doing 4 years there and being like, I don't know. I'm not sure I really want to go to engineering school. And that happened to a lot of folks at Goshen, that you went and like, who wants to leave their senior year of college? And so, yeah, just ended up finishing the degree there.
And what was the degree?
It was physics. Yeah. Bachelor's of Arts.
And the reason you don't want to leave is because you had a lot of friends there?
Yeah. 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 Goshen's a great place. Yeah.
So now you have your bachelor's in physics. What comes next?
So the summer after my junior year, I got an internship. It's kind of set my career trajectory. I didn't realize it at the time, but I got an internship in Colorado at a, there's a bunch of national labs around the U.S. They're like, the Department of Energy has these, you know, Los Alamos, there's Fermilab in Chicago. There's a bunch of these big national laboratories to do research. And one of them is in Colorado, and it's called the National Renewable Energy Laboratory. I actually heard about it because a guy who worked there, his dad, Joe Barry, worked at Goshen College, or was affiliated with, maybe he was an old, he used to teach at Goshen. I think he used to teach at Goshen. And he came to Berkey Avenue Mennonite Church once and told me that like NREL existed. And I was like, what? This sounds cool. So that's why I applied for an internship there. So summer after junior year, went out to Colorado for 3 months to do wind turbine research. So that was kind of my first foray into wind. And then after I graduated from Goshen, I went out for another 6 months for a kind of a second round of research. And then I applied to jobs all over the country, and I got a job in Oregon. So I moved to Oregon.
Had you ever been out here before?
First time I came to Oregon was getting off the plane for my interview. So yeah, kind of sight unseen, just came on. Never really like, not to say that it's bad to dream of Oregon or want to move out west, but I was never one that, like, growing up, I was like, oh, I want to move west or like go to the mountains or whatever, even though I love, you know, all the outdoorsy things and yada, yada, yada. But that never really had been a thought, but I just ended up coming out for the job.
What year was that?
2014.
So apparently you got the job.
I did. Yeah, I got it.
And where are you still at the same place or what's, because I'm not even sure what you're doing.
No, I'm not at the same job. I worked there for 4.5 years. So I think it would have been January 2019 that I gave my notice there. And yeah, it was, I learned a lot. It was a good experience. It was a startup. So, you know, lots of ups and downs, but I enjoyed it.
So what are you doing now?
So now I work for another wind turbine company. The first one I worked for made like smaller turbines. So for like your farm or something like that, like 10 kilowatts would be like a rating example, if that means anything, but like enough to power a house basically. And now I work for a company. It's actually based in Denmark, but their North American headquarters are in Portland. It's called Vestas. And they're one of the big wind turbine manufacturers globally. So like when you drive through the Midwest to the gorge and you see all those turbines, approximately a third of them are Vestas turbines.
What specifically is your role there?
How would I describe it? I'm a mechanical engineer. I don't know, professional fixer. I think like, yeah, we do a lot of different things. Essentially, we're on the service and operations side of it. So we don't design the turbines. We work on reliability. We work on safety for the technicians. We work on, you know, improvements to the turbines. You know, let's say there something's, maybe it's operating in a weird way, or it's not doing quite what it's supposed to do, or we just think that it can be improved. We'll work on those types of projects. So,
do you ever have to climb up those great big towers?
Sometimes we get to climb up those great big towers.
Aha! Uh-huh. There's a difference in how I said it and how you said it. You get to. Do you like going up there?
I always do. I think it's a lot of fun. It's both, it's fun to do hands-on work in the turbines, and it's also fun to interact with folks from all over the, you know, country. When you're, last week I was in Oklahoma, and you just get to meet a wide variety of folks and get to learn from them, and always enjoy kind of that crossing paths with people. So yeah, I don't do it a lot, but I get to go up maybe 2 to 4 times a year or something like that for specific projects.
And it sounds like you travel all over the country. Do you travel over the world for this as well, or just the country?
Well, hopefully someday. No, and I don't travel that much. I've traveled maybe twice in 2 years or something for work outside of Oregon and Washington. Mostly, if I can, I just go somewhere close by. And some of my colleagues travel a lot. It just depends on the type of work. But a lot of what we can do, we can, you know, it's amazing with data now in rural places. You can have video chats with people in the middle of rural Kansas and look at problems together. So that works. But no, I've not gotten a chance to travel around the world for Vestas.
At what point did you discover Portland Mennonite Church?
So I was living in Tigard for the first year that I lived in Oregon, and Portland Mennonite was a good ways away. Didn't have a car. Sometimes I needed some singing, and I would take the bus. It would be a little bit more of an endeavor to get out there. But so I probably came, I don't know, a handful of times my first year, but not particularly frequently. Probably 2015 is when I started attending more regularly, I think. Yeah, somewhere in there.
So you were aware that it was here fairly early on.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how I exactly heard of PMC per se, besides just that it was one of the Mennonite churches in Portland.
You sometimes lead singing, and I think you've probably been on some other committees. In other words, you're relatively involved in church. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I think so. I like church.
Can you give me any specifics about Portland Mennonite that you find attractive?
Oh, I think there's a lot of good things about PMC. I think it's a cool blend of people. There's a lot of people who didn't necessarily grow up Mennonite, which offers interesting perspectives. I think PMC is better than any Mennonite church I've ever been to at like stating Mennonite values, or like, you know, Anabaptist perspectives. I think in large part because so many folks are not, it's not assumed. Whereas in like a familial church that's, you know, your great-great-grandpa went there 150 years ago, you don't need to say why you're pacifist. You don't even need to say you're pacifist because, like, well, we know we're pacifist. But I think a lot can be lost there too. So I think that's something in our leadership has done well, and just people in general have done well. So that's kind of nice. And still like pretty focused on Jesus. So that's cool.
And we can't let this interview end without me saying congratulations, because in your personal life, there was a big announcement a couple of Sundays ago. So tell us what's going on.
Yeah. Karina Kreider and I are engaged. So yeah, we're getting married next summer. So that'll be fun. And yeah, it's an exciting step, an exciting stage to be in.
Congratulations again. And what brought her to Portland?
she was finishing up her Mennonite voluntary service in Tucson and kind of looking for next steps, possibly grad school. And we were together a distance at that time. And so I tried my best to sway her this way and fortunately succeeded. So.
And finally, I consider you relatively young. I'm not sure what you consider yourself. I consider you a young adult. And I understand that maybe it's just that my perspective is skewed, but still, 10 years, 15 years from now, where would you like to be or what would you like to be doing? What might life look like in the best of all possible scenarios?
10 to 15 years. That's a good question. Well, I hope it has a lot of the things that I have now, my friends and Karina and yeah, a healthy body. I don't know. I love like running and playing soccer and stuff. So that make a big difference. I hope continuing to do something related to climate change, whether that's asbestos or something else, as far as professionally, probably. And yeah, I don't know. I love Oregon. I also don't have any family out here. So there's, part of me would love to live close to one of my sisters or something like that at some point, or my parents, or Karina's sister or parents. So that also might play into a good situation. But I don't know, good can look a lot of different ways, and be content with what happens.
Well, Andrew, thank you so much for giving us this little glimpse into your amazing life.
Well, amazing is generous, but thank you, Claire.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.